I have a theory that sustainable development, sustainable farming, sustainable business practices, sustainability really means predictability. What business owner has ever enjoyed some unpredictable event within his business? Probably none, unless it factors into this unpredictable popularity of whatever I sell. Then he's pretty happy about that, I'm sure. But by and large, what makes a business profitable is good planning, and planning only pays off when all the little pieces that go into your plan fall into place. And I'm sure that some businesses are more predictable than others, but most wouldn't be. And so in our new Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is tied at the hip to the UN Agenda 2030 Sustainable Development Goals, in that new system, they want as many things to be centrally controlled as they can. And you can see some of the things they're going after are actually some of the things that have been historically the most unpredictable and disruptive, to use one of their favorite words, disruptive to their profit cycle. That being, say, the weather and labor. Those things cost them a lot of money, and they've never been able to get a tight enough control on any of those things, on those things and related sub things like illness. No, drought, too much rain, too much sun, a cold early spring which ruins the planting season, throws everything off, right? But this really only matters in a centralized, centrally planned, global trade scenario. Okay, maybe not. You can look back and you can say, well, there were historic droughts in different areas, and this led to, you know, massively disrupted agricultural products, agricultural growth and food chains and things like this. But I don't remember hearing, like, there was the big Dust Bowl in the 1930s, which was, you know, Oklahoma, the Midwest of the United States, which ended up with a bunch of people abandoning that area and moving into California and other places in the United States because the Dust Bowl happened and nothing could grow. And it sounds pretty awful. It was one of the things I studied in university because I took a course called environmental, I forget what it was. The politics of the environment, maybe. And I didn't realize they were talking about the environment. So my whole course was about, you know, things like the Dust Bowl. It was interesting. I stuck with it because who cared? This was just some humanities credit that I needed. Anyway, the Dust Bowl is an example of an unpredictable event that happened that disrupted commerce and food chains, food supplies, and actually migration. I mean, it had a huge impact. And I guess, you know, if you're a central planner that's like, we have everything down to the ounce, you know, we're going to send this much grain here and this many heads of lettuce there, and Oklahoma farmers are producing a good portion of that, you know, then it's really bad because then you've got to rejig an entire global supply chain. Meanwhile, if you were just doing more local food distribution, you could compensate by grabbing from other areas close by on a whim. I'm not saying that would be easy or that there would be enough or whatever, but you know what? I never heard in the whole studying of the Dust Bowl was that anybody went hungry. Nobody was going hungry, at least not wide swaths of the population or whatever. I'm sure it wasn't a good time. I'm sure they didn't have their normal abundance. But I wonder what would happen. You know, if I was a central planner, this type of thing would freak me out. And so then I would start getting into things like, cloud seeding and ionospheric heating so that I could interfere with the jet stream and water patterns. And geez, maybe I might even want to capture carbon and turn it into some kind of fertilizer or whatever. What I'm saying here is, sustainability really means predictability. And they're messing in areas that are just unpredictable. Sorry. That is the domain of nature. I would say it's the domain of God, but you don't have to be religious to understand. This is the domain of nature. And so is illness. And so is labor in a lot of ways, because these are people. And slavery is wrong. So just saying, well, I'm sorry, but we need X amount of workers to do X job, and they're just going to have to do it exactly how we want it done for this many hours and this time of year, and then we don't need them. We'd like to dispense with them after that. This has been the eternal struggle of capitalism, is trying to control labor and trying to control the inputs to production. But let's talk about the people element right now, labor. I personally think, you know, they've enslaved us in every possible way. If you go through history and you look at straight up slavery, but now you had feudalism, you had indentured servitude, you still have that. We have debt slavery now, where you just can't stop because you owe everybody. You're just servicing the debt you've already accrued, and your life is pretty much over because they won't give you any more debt. So whatever you bought, you know, work the rest of your life to pay for. Chasing the dream of being financially unburdened someday while inflation robs you. But I'm not trying to make an economic argument in this audio today. I'm trying to make an argument about the whole notion of sustainability and how it really means predictability. And so what are they doing right now? It looks to me like, okay, they're threatening the use of AI and robots to take over a lot of jobs. And I think that's going to happen wherever a company can afford it. That's one level of it. And of course, that's already been happening, you know, in a lot of ways. They've already been replacing a lot of human labor with automated things. You can see examples of it all over the place. Did you know, young people, did you know, we used to have operators that were living people. You could press zero on your phone, or dial zero back in the day, and a living person would answer. And it was really kind of a neat thing because you could ask them what time it was. Some people called them like counselors, which I'm sure really annoyed them, but I used to hear of that. They could help you get a taxi. They could help you find a phone number. It was quite a thing. Living people, that was their job. And of course, that's been long gone, replaced by those horrible automated things. Companies, of course, used to have living people answer the phone too. I haven't had a real person answer a phone, except maybe at a doctor's office. No, I can't even remember the last time that happened. And now we have the touchscreen ordering at fast food restaurants. We have the self-checkout at grocery stores. Realtors are, I don't even know why they exist. I guess they can unlock doors. That's about it. Unlock doors and make sure people don't steal things from the houses they go to look at, because everything they do is automated now. If you ask them a question, they usually send you the listing. You're like, yeah, I already saw that. anyway. So they want predictable labor. That's really scary because not everything can be done by robot. And that means they want predictable people. And more, I mean, look, I'm just going to say the reason that I don't like this idea is because I'm an unpredictable person. I've been told this, people. You just never know what you're going to get, basically. You're not really sure what I'm going to like. And I'm sorry. Maybe that causes problems for people that I know. But, you know, it's also what people like about me. So whatever, this is the way I was built. And you can't ask me to be predictable. It's sort of like the thing I said in my last audio where I was talking to the woman who said, who would pick being partially blind over getting an operation because they don't trust doctors or whatever? And I guess, see, that's unpredictable. Maybe most people would just hold their breath and go in for the operation. But see, my not doing that doesn't affect anybody else. So it's really weird that this is the reason it makes people angry, because I didn't do what they thought they would do and most people would do. But what a horrible mindset. It's part of our problem, isn't it? That we want to snuggle into the group, the biggest group, whatever you figure other people would do. You think, well, that's the safest, best thing to do. And that's the world they're building. Mostly with sticks, you know, the carrot and stick method. But I see it as mostly using the stick. Like they're going to beat you over the head if you don't do what most people would do. People get really quite angry if you don't respond the way they've predicted that you're going to respond. And so can you imagine if you are a global overlord and you've got to sort of take into account all these constituencies across the entire planet, and any one of them might respond in a way that you don't like or that kind of goes against what you think they should have done. Must have meltdowns all the time, every day. But by bringing everything into the digital realm where it can be tracked and assessed and data mined, this gives them a great big tool set with which to build predictable people. So they're putting in, you know, behavioral analysis to everything. In fact, there is a school of philosophy / economic thought called behavioral economics. You can look that up on YouTube. There's people giving lectures about this behavioral economics, and it is just another form of coercion. They're studying your mind. They're studying what makes you tick and how you make decisions and how they can ensure that you're going to do what they want you to do. Perhaps that was one of the main purposes of the COVID pandemic, is to really root out the people who couldn't be nudged into doing what they wanted. You know, we won't go quietly, these type people. Like, no matter what you say, I am not going to be coerced, not by my neighbors ganging up on me, not by my family ostracizing me, not by threats of job loss, not by anything. And oh boy, did you ever, and me, identify yourself as being an unsustainable person, unpredictable person. Of course, now maybe they can build us all in as predictable. They've got our data sets. They understand what doesn't work with us. And yeah, they're sort of getting us into another identity group. The unsustainables. Hillary should have, maybe Hillary will update her condemnation of the people who don't vote for her. Remember she called everybody a basket of deplorables? Yes, well, we're actually the basket of unsustainables. Jeez, I don't want to give them any ideas, but I wonder if they'd be so bold as to start classifying groups of people as unsustainable. We must rid ourselves of these unsustainable individuals who are causing havoc in our supply chains, in our health system, in our societies. I wonder. Well, true progress and creativity and joy and advancement in the world can only come from those people who don't just do what everybody else does. We all know that. And I think I would love to be a fly on the wall in some of their conversations. Because no matter what they do with AI and robots and education, they're always going to need the creative people, the think outside the box people. But what they've been doing for so many years is recruiting people who all think alike. And what they've been doing in education with social emotional learning and Common Core and all kinds of new ways of, quote, teaching people, what they've been doing there is also building people that are only able to think with the herd, think inside the pack of zebras, you know, look for that space where everybody is thinking the same and it's a large group and they go and hide inside of that. How are you gonna create anything if everybody is of that mindset? Yes, it will be very sustainable, very predictable, but it'll be just boring. I was gonna say vanilla, but it won't even be as good as vanilla. It's going to be like muck. Just muck. I often think about inclusion, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I imagine this scenario. Picture this. There's a big room. It's sort of like they're doing a psychological experiment or something. And they bring in people one by one and they ask them to pick out a tube of paint that's their favorite color. They got all kinds of tubes of paint there. So everybody comes in one by one, picks out their favorite color, all alone, nobody else in the room. Then they bring everybody in to the room together with their tubes of paint. And that was individuality. There were the individuals making their individual choices. They're all happy. No harm, no foul. Everybody's allowed to have a different favorite color, right? But then they bring them all back in the room. And now we come to diversity, equity, inclusion in the communitarian view of the world. And everybody opens the tube of paint. They put a blob of paint onto a canvas in their own little zone. But what diversity, equity, inclusion means is that you've got to take a paintbrush and just smush those all together. Smush them all together. So nobody gets their favorite color anymore. Nobody. It's just a big canvas of brownish gray. And that's what everything will be like if we continue on with this diversity, equity, inclusion thing. Everything will be a blob of brownish gray. Absolutely nobody gets what they want. Does that sound like an ideal world to you? I mean, it would come to a point if I was in, let's say that was like your lifestyle, where I would be like, just give one person their favorite color. I'm so sick and tired of looking at this brownish gray. Like, it doesn't have to be mine. Pick purple guy if you want. Pick purple guy and let's do everything purple because I can't stand this muck anymore. And this doesn't just apply to paint. This applies to thought processes and music and business practices and conversations and games and sports and really important things too. Every building will end up looking the same, basically, and it is. Look around you. You've got this communist block style stuff with most of them incorporate glass now. Too much glass, steel girders sticking out at funny angles. Very ugly. Speaking of architecture and how hideous it is, for some reason that whole conversation really triggers I'm going to call them leftists, but the communitarians of all sorts. They don't like people posting about glorious older architecture. Yeah, we don't need a reminder of what individual ideas of beauty and hard work and commitment, long-term commitment to building something that will last. We don't need reminders of that, because that doesn't at all go along with the sustainable and predictable diversity, equity, inclusion agenda. No, that will maybe spark inspiration in one individual, and we cannot have that. That's unpredictable. Unsustainable. Are you unsustainable? I'm unsustainable. Oh yeah, I was going to tell you, speaking of the architecture thing, there's a video on YouTube you could probably still find by James Howard Kunstler. He's a great commentator, biting wit. I like him very much. He has a blog called Cluster, F-U-C-K. Sorry for the language. I wish he'd rename it, but he can't now. He's trapped, just like I'm trapped with Amazing Polly. Cluster F Nation, where he writes, I think, twice weekly, and he does some podcasts. But long time ago, he did a video presentation, might have been a TED Talk, on architecture and the public space. And so good. So funny, too. Yeah, I recommend him. You know, these control freaks, they really think they can make people happy this way, and they have to, by any means necessary, because in the mode where everybody's blending their colors into gray, people don't hold up psychologically very well in that milieu, in that environment, in that headspace. People just don't hold up. They start to break down and regress and go into sort of hopeless repetition of routine, meaningless routine, which I guess on, you know, to them, that would work really well for them on some levels. But on other levels, it wouldn't. Because when you get absolutely despondent, you don't put effort into anything. I was watching a documentary a while back about some country that had been behind the Iron Curtain. It was old footage. And this woman, it was inside an apartment. They were talking to some of the residents of this one town that was just so dilapidated and depressing and waterlogged and falling apart under the communist system, under the Soviet system. And the woman, she was like, I don't know, she couldn't have even been 30 years old, I don't think. She was in a house dress, and she was down on her hands and knees with a bucket and a scrub brush, and she was washing the walls, washing the baseboards of her house. And the guy asked her, what do you dream about? What do you dream about for the rest of your life? And she didn't even look up, and her response was, dream about nothing. Why would I bother? Man, it stuck with me. I can picture this scene in my head so clearly. I don't want this world for my children, or your children, or their children. But we've got to break out of being beaten dogs. It isn't safe to be predictable. They're going to pick off that pack of zebras one by one, even if you're snuggled on the inside. You don't know how things are going to shift, and you're going to be the one that gets taken down next. And I mean, it's easy. It's easy when you're predictable. It's easy to take you down. They just aren't yet. It's going to be the unpredictable ones, the unsustainable ones, who not only find their way through this maze of insanity that's happening now, but they're also going to build the future. They have to be the ones to build the future, because they've literally, the education system, the mass media, the system of reward and punishment that they've got going right now has beaten the, is taken the life out of people. It's taken the imagination out of people. It's taken the courage out. It's taken the willingness to work hard out. The only thing they have left, as an acquaintance of mine on Twitter says, is competitive obedience. They have competitive obedience. That's what drives them. And that's great for the people who want sustainable humans. Like, they want they want to control how much weather affects you by seeding the clouds and trying to steer the wind and trying to light fires to block out the sun and spray things in the air to block out the sun. Okay, this has come out now, finally. Well, in truth, the idea of spraying the air to block out the sun has been a reality. It's called geoengineering. It's been a reality for many, many years. People are just finally now understanding that it's real. Because, of course, they've been educated to think that anybody who says that is a conspiracy theorist nut, an unsustainable deplorable. Anyway, so to build their sustainable / predictable future, I think this is why they're moving to buy up farmland. Because I don't think they want to use it as traditional farmland. That's too unpredictable for them. I think they want a lot of greenhouse type food and hydroponics type food and GMO food that they literally grow in vats like that Beyond Meat. It's disgusting. Well, technically it's meat. They make it from the stem cells of animals. That's not meat though. Meat comes from, first of all, the divine act of creation between two real living animals who bring forth a baby who is sustained by all these biological processes and interacting with the biological processes of plants. I mean, there's so many biological and natural processes that go into creating the animal we call a cow, which we then, you know, slaughter and butcher and feed to people. I get it, vegans and vegetarians, you hate that idea, but this is a natural process. And I'm, by the way, I'm totally against factory farming. I think we should honor the animal and be kind to it and everything, for so many reasons. But my point is, this is the natural process, and these guys think they can short-circuit that in order to make it more sustainable. That they can grow these in a lab and that it's still the same thing as the process I just described to you. It clearly isn't. And the same goes for vegetables that are grown in a solution rather than in the soil with exposure to the sun and all the rest of it. But it's more sustainable. It's more predictable for them. And I think they're trying to make people predictable as well, so that we may be sustainable. We won't argue with them. We'll just go along. We'll make the sacrifices they expect us to make. We won't think outside the box. We will only be good little recipients of whatever it is they want to put into us or have us do. I'm proudly unpredictable, but it's not like it's an easy path in life. It's amazing the things people will get angry with you about when you don't react the way they thought you would react. And I'm not talking about reacting angrily. I'm talking about I don't know, not being excited by the things they thought you would be excited by. Not grabbing for an opportunity that they think is so wonderful that they put in front of you. Yeah, sort of like how you feel when people tell a joke and obviously you know they thought it was funny, so you feel obliged to laugh. Yeah, but way bigger scale than that. Well, I don't know how long I've been talking, but maybe I should stop talking now. Let's hear the cardinal. You little. The cardinals are the most space-aged of bird songs. Here at the end there sounds like some kind of laser. Pew, 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 pew. Okay, everybody. Well, thanks for being here. I'm going to stop talking now. Please go over to my website, amazingpolly.net. Thank you, by the way, for all the wonderful, marvelous comments you've all left under my last two videos. Extraordinary. It's well worth reading through the comment section, especially on Rumble, because it's not as full of trolls as BitChute. But both, because if you are someone who enjoyed the content of my last two videos, I bet you will really enjoy hearing from others on those topics. And there's really smart, thoughtful comments there for you to read. So please go do that. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Until next time, peace out.